Sarah Golding here with the Mediva Podcast, episode 402. Yes, from this moment onwards, I hope you have a groovier and more exciting, fun-filled day. Today, we have the wonderful Caroline Minx, a superhuman, it seems, a creative from the hard-of-hearing community, on talking all things, all of their gazillion shows, and sharing best practices for inclusive ways of working for all. And we find out why Zombies Run and Felix Trench are responsible for Caroline jumping in to make their own. So thank goodness for Felix too. Huzzahs! Enjoy. Folks of audio fiction loving natures, we have one of the most exciting folks to explode onto the audio fiction scene in the last year or so. It's Caroline Minx, who is a voice actor, producer, and editor of so many things. I think it's probably easier that you talk about your own amazing shows. Welcome to Mediva, Caroline.
Hi. Oh my gosh, that is such a lovely introduction.
Hi. Well, it's very cool to see you. And I hear you even, not see you. Well, I kind of sort of see you. I do have a picture up here of your beautiful face. And you have been involved in so much in such a short time. You seem to be a beauteous words and creative machine. So please do tell folks, if for some reason they haven't heard of you yet, they will do. Let them know where they can find you. Gosh. What do you make? What do you do?
I am kind of all over the place. That is a direct result of me auditioning for absolutely everything I could.
Nothing wrong with that.
When I first started a little over a year ago, and I just was like, oh, maybe I'll get one or two things. And then I kept getting cast in things and I kind of panicked. But voice acting wise, I'm on shows that I don't make. I'm on This Planet Needs a Name as Zahava. Yeah. I'm on Ad Read as the computer god. And then I do some guest spots here and there. I'm on Reignition Theory that just came out as Chloe Vasker, which is very cool.
I haven't heard that one. Yeah, new one. Tick.
Yeah, it's the third episode just came out yesterday, I think. And I play a zombie killer killing captain in the 1800s.
Oh, the world needs more of that in their ears.
It was a very exciting part. And then I do make a lot of shows because I have no self-control.
Sounds familiar.
The one that people probably know most is Seen and Not Heard. And I also co-create Hughes and Minx Ghost Detectives and Lightheart. Yes. I have a microfiction series called Shifts that I do as well. And I'm working on another microfiction with A.R. Olivieri called Surreal Love, which will come out pretty soon. Very excited about that one. I was actually just working on that earlier today.
Oh my goodness. Wow, all of these collaborators are wonderful folks.
Yes,
And very exciting. Should hunt them all down too.
Yes.
My goodness, how exciting.
Yeah.
And you also have a family as well. So, you know, you're just a superhuman somebody.
I don't get a lot of sleep, but it's okay.
No, again, sounds familiar. So how on earth did you jump in and find this wonderful world of audio storytelling? What sort of drew you to these climes?
Well, I've always wanted to do voice acting, but I didn't know how to get into it because I don't live in a city that has that kind of thing available, really.
Right.
And so I was like, oh, well, I don't live in one of these big cities where all these things are produced, so I could never do it. So I didn't really think about it, but it was a lifelong thing I'd always wanted to do. And I actually got into it because I was playing Zombies Run. I'm a runner.
Oh, yes.
And I loved it. And I was like, I wonder what all these other voice actors have been in. And, you know, I was just looking people up and then happened to Google Felix Trench's name because I was like, who on earth is playing this character?
Yeah.
And I just loved it and found Wooden Overcoats from that.
Well,
that
the best.
Oh, it's so good. I know. I was like, this is an excellent way to get in. And from there, I found, you know, Quid Pro Euro and Oblivity and We Fix Space Junk and The Orphans. And I was very much hanging out in like kind of a sci-fi UK podcast world for quite a while there.
Great. Lovely. Yeah. You lucky thing.
Yeah, very lucky. Really good shows.
Yeah, superb. And so skills-wise, have you kind of come from an acting-loving background?
Yeah,
is that the source?
I have a theater background. So I started in theater when I was 5, and I've been doing that my whole life. And a lot of musical theater and Shakespeare are kind of where I've done most of my work. But I also direct children's theater, which I've been doing for about 6 years. Yeah.
Superb. So you have all of the skills needed to do pretty much everything.
So everything does translate pretty well. It's really nice. I was surprised by how many things that I've learned in theater do work really well in audio.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to say as well that the focus of this podcast is accessibility and inclusivity for disabled creatives. And you yourself are a member of the yes. disabled community. And do you want to fill folks in as to how that works, how that changed your life, and how at the moment, as a partially deaf person, is that correct way of putting it?
I go back and forth between calling myself deaf and hard of hearing.
Okay.
It kind of depends on who I'm talking to and what they will understand.
Right.
Because sometimes if you say, I'm hard of hearing to someone, they don't quite get that. No, that means I can't actually hear you if you're whispering.
Right.
I can't hear you. So that person might hear I'm deaf. My hearing is estimated to be about half of what's considered normal, maybe a little less.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I started losing it when I was in high school. I've had two major drops in my hearing, once when I was about 17, 18, and then again when I was about 24.
Mm-hmm. Gosh. And that must have been a shock and a change.
It was odd because I remember the first time it happened, I was like, well, I've been sick a lot lately, so it's probably just that. I'm probably just, you know, bouncing back. But then, you know, a couple of months go by and the hearing doesn't get any better and I'm definitely well again.
Yeah.
It's like something's not right. And mm-hmm. And then again, when I was older, realizing it happened right after my son was born, or right around the time he was almost cooked. And then when he was born, I was like, I kind of wrote it off to just like weird pregnancy things, because I think
sure. there's a lot that goes on there.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that unless something is like actively hurting you while you're pregnant, you're kind of like, it's just a weird quirk of that's just what your body does, because so much weirdness does happen. It was another case of it's not coming back, and in fact is getting worse. And I didn't quite, it was very strange, because you get busy and you kind of adjust without realizing you've adjusted. And there was that moment of me turning on the TV and thinking it was muted, but it wasn't. And I was like, oh God, I can't hear it.
And what a massive change as well to how then your sort of functioning life might change. And I mean, I'm talking to you now through my microphone miles and miles away from where you are.
And Cat is so, trying to attack me.
Oh.
Sydney, stop it. What are you doing?
Oh no.
He is so jealous.
Oh, jealous. Oh. Wants to be on Madiva. There's not enough cat representation in audio fiction.
He's such a rascal. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry, you attacked live on audio.
He wants attention so badly. I looked away from him for two seconds. Heaven forbid.
Bless. You know, I was just saying with regards to how things work for you right now. Like, if you're obviously have limited hearing, could you talk to us about how you function as a creative, not just for listening to folks to respond to perhaps as an actor, but also you mix and edit as well, don't you? So do you want to talk us through your processes? It'd be fascinating.
A lot of it I have learned a lot about asking for help and being willing to rely on others, which is not something that comes easily to me.
Right.
I always want to be useful to everyone else. And so when people are like, let me help, I'm like, no, my value. But I have learned a lot, because obviously there are things I simply can't hear or I can't understand. So when I'm editing, I do, like, if let's say I'm placing dialogue for something, I'll do that without headphones. I'll just place it, because ear fatigue is a very real thing. So I'll just place it in Audacity and I'll put it all together. And then when it comes time to fix levels and add sound effects and that sort of thing, I do a very basic, again, just sort of dropping them in, and I don't mess with it too much. And it's not until I get to the point where I need to mix it down for someone else to listen to that I start really adjusting things like amplification and doing noise reduction and fixing all the little details. And I rely a lot on my sight for that.
Mm-hmm.
I read the waveform. Right. So like I can't hear it if someone does it like that click sound with their mouth. I can't hear it, but I can see what it looks like. I can see the little click on the waveform, so I know to take that out.
Yes.
And the great thing about having not only really great collaborators, but also having really great friends is I can edit pretty much any time of the day. I can ask someone, hey, will you listen to this and just tell me if everyone's volume is right and if the sound effects are coming through, and people are willing to do it. And
yes, great.
I lean very heavily on Evan Tess Murray and Tal Minear in particular for that.
Both legends have been on this show before, giving so much wonderful advice. Yeah, yeah, I agree.
The three of us work on Lighthearts together, and yes. I do some of the dialogue placement for that. Yeah. Because that usually ends up being a job that I take on. And because of that, sometimes I'm like, hey, can y'all, does this sound right? Because I can't always tell. Yeah, they're the best.
Yeah, I mean, and it's such a beauteous, positive kind of everything in the audio fiction universe that yeah. I think if everybody could take a bit of Lighthearts and let it lift them, the world would be a better, finer place,
it's,
I do feel.
It's my happy place. I love that show. Yeah. I love working on it.
Yes. You know, we do need that. It's we do need sweet. That. Especially yeah. now. Yeah. And just with regards as an actor working on other projects, I'd imagine that you do table reads and or yeah. live records with groups. And
yes.
I mean, how does that work currently?
It works interestingly. Sometimes it's fine. I actually just did a table read for the next episode of Ghost Detective, so I can actually use that as an example. Mm-hmm. Generally, we do it in video. I usually ask, you know, can this be done on Google Meet because they have auto captions.
Yes.
Which are not perfect by a long shot, but they certainly help. And then when I have the video as well, I can do like a split screen so I can look at the video and have the script on the other side. And that allows me to speech read lips at the yes. same time. And I can tell who's talking because sometimes, now this doesn't necessarily mean people sound alike, but to my ears, sometimes I can't tell who's talking.
Okay.
So depending on who's in the conversation, I might need that video just so I can tell who on earth is yeah. who's speaking at the moment.
Yes.
So yeah, when I do, like if I come on as an actor to something that I'm not actually producing and in control of, generally I'll ask, you know, hey, can we do this on video? Can we do this specifically on Google Meet because the captions are helpful. And generally, everyone's very accommodating. Mm-hmm. I've never had anyone be like, no. everyone's
good,
great.
Good.
Yeah. It's a big...
yeah, long may that continue.
yeah, in general, I've found that it's the most accommodating community I've ever been a part of. And because I can say as a theater actor, I have not had that kind of experience before.
Okay.
So it has been interesting for me to compare and contrast that because... like, because I do musical theater, you know, that's an extra challenge because there's the music and I have to hear the harmonies and I have to hear my cues and I have to follow the rhythm. Yes. And like I did Sound of Music and this was a few years ago and there was one part where I could not hear when I was supposed to start singing. And I finally turned to the conductor and I said, can you just do like a big gesture for me
yes.
that I can see yes. out of the corner of my eye?
Excellent. So... brilliant. And so, I mean, functioning as well as possible with this in your everyday, I'm sure can be quite overwhelming too. I mean, just want to bring up in Seen and Not Heard, there's this wonderful part, I think, quite early on in the episodes where you do give an example of how things sound to you. Mm-hmm. And I'd just like to play that now for a moment, if I may, so folks sure. can just get an idea of what it is that you are having in your everyday. So just play that yeah. for a moment.
I can barely understand a word she's saying. With the reverb, it all sounds like... well, this will certainly be a thing.
So, without further ado, please welcome to the stage... our junior class.
It sounds so... I can't make heads or tails of it. I can't make out the lyrics. The harmonies just bleed together. The entire concert is like that. And I can fake my way through it. I can smile and clap and look proud. I'm great at that. But then, of course, I have to talk to people afterwards in a big, loud, echoing auditorium. Oh, yeah, great. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
I think I saw you when you went to Sarah's desk. You're Sarah, right?
Yeah, right. I have become a master at pretending I know what's being said. A skill I picked up in 8th grade algebra. I mean, I failed 8th grade algebra, but hey, skill's a skill. The point of this skill is not for my benefit, but for the benefit of everyone around me. It lets them think I'm listening and absorbing and participating, and it lets me get away relatively unscathed.
I when I heard that, I was like, wow, that's amazing. Do you know what I mean? It really almost moved me, because I just thought, gosh, you know, that is really difficult to...
It is.
With your thoughts, I'm sure, as well, and, you know, our own mind thoughts, as well as trying to to deal with that. How on earth do you sort of find coping strategies to deal with that every day?
A lot of it has to do with just self-advocacy. I have to constantly ask people, like, hey, can you look at me when you speak to me, or make sure that you've got my attention before you start talking? Mm. And it's this, those constant reminders to people who've known me, my, you know, forever, who still seem to forget.
Okay.
And, you know, because in a crowd, I can't understand speech if there's background noise. If I'm at a party, I mean, remember those parties?
Oh my gosh, don't, I might cry.
Remember places and people?
I haven't been in a pub since goodness knows when. I miss a proper pint, I must say.
Oh, God. I know.
One day soon, Caroline. Yes. Yeah. Hashtag soon.
Soon. Yes, soon.
Me too.
I'm choosing to believe it. Someday soon, I too will be able to sit in a restaurant and not understand a damn thing. And I can't wait. But it is the one thing I do want to, I do this constantly, but I'm going to do it again. I want to shout out to Almanir for being the brilliant sound designer that they are, because I was just saying to them, I originally was going to do the sound design for Seen and Not Heard, and realized I can't give a hearing person that experience. I just can't do it. I needed someone who didn't understand what it sounded like to create it, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Because of what I was trying to do. It was so accurate to my experience that when they sent me the file, I was out on a walk and I stopped in the middle of the sidewalk and I just started crying while I was listening to it, because it was exactly it. And I've had several people say, oh my God, that's what it sounds like for me too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it was so exciting to get to have that moment of, because I've been trying to make Seen and Not Heard since I was in college.
Okay. I love that, by the way. I think it's a wonderful show.
Thank you.
The gentle unrolling romance and just the relationships within it. I absolutely love listening to that. So
I'm really proud of it. I really am. It's it is something that has taken a lot of different forms over the years. And the fact that it found its home in audio drama, I think, is kind of wonderful, because it's not even ironic. I think it's a perfect fit, because that's what it's about, hearing. And it's about you know, when the hearing is gone, what do you miss? What do you gain? Because you do gain. I have gained a lot from losing my hearing, which I think surprises people. It takes a long time to kind of get to the point where I can acknowledge that and I can see the things that I've gained from it. But now that I'm at that place, you know, I wouldn't trade it, honestly.
I mean, can you share any of those things? Maybe one or two, like.
Yeah. Oh, the people I've met. I've made so many friends who I cannot imagine my life without, specifically because I was looking for community and I was looking for people who had that shared experience. And actually, one of our consultants for Seen and Not Heard, who is culturally deaf as well, so they sign and they are immersed in deaf culture, named Riley C.J. Kenway, is one of my dearest friends. And I met them because, like, 6 or 7 years ago, I was on Tumblr and I was trying to see if there were other deaf people I could connect with on there. And they were one of them. And we've been friends ever since. And
the upsides of social media. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, there are plenty of them. Thank goodness. Because, oh my gosh, it can be a mess. But there are so many good things about it.
I agree.
And I think I honestly don't know if I would be in audio drama if I didn't have the struggles that I have participating in theater. I don't know that I would have turned to other performance venues, or like other mediums rather, because it's hard to perform on a stage for me like there's a lot of moving parts, of course, in a play, and that makes it really difficult for me sometimes to be part of it. And then coming into audio drama, where a lot of it is solo, you know, you do a lot of your work on your own.
Can do, yes.
In your booth or your blanket fort, sweating. And
hello to any voice actors who've been sweating it out today.
I was earlier. But I think that I needed that creative outlet so badly. And if I hadn't been seeking something, a specific kind of experience, I don't know if I would have come into audio drama. And I'm so glad that I did, because it has been absolutely life-changing in every conceivable way.
I think you're a wonderful addition. The creativity and the amount of amazing things you're working on is just inspiring. So thank you for, you know, jumping in with all feet and everything.
I kind of dive in. I did a cannonball. Excellent. I was like, I'm here.
Making big splashes. I think one thing to focus on now is what this landscape of audio fiction, beautiful as it is perhaps doing well at the moment. What are things that, you know, do work for the disabled community, do you think, that other folks should do more of?
The thing that I can really only kind of speak for my own experience here, but one thing that I have, that is to say, I really am just going to focus on coming from a deaf and hard of hearing perspective. One thing that I think has been really nice is that I have not necessarily had to ask for things. People have asked me what I need.
Okay.
And it's a small consideration that I think anyone who is a creator or an employer or anything like that, bringing in anyone, asking, you know, hey, what do you need from me? What will make this smooth and easy for you? What can I provide that will make this work well for both of us? I'll use working on Khalila Stormfire as an example. I did an episode of that, and Lizette, they were like, okay, so what, when we do our table read, what platform do you want to use? What's going to work best for you? And then they were like, do you need me to record this in advance so that you can copy the pitch and the tone, or what's going to help you? Because I had to sing for that. And so it was really, really nice to just have those offers. And I've had that experience several times over where I haven't had to be like, hi, can I please have, because it's always a little awkward.
Sure.
But that looking at someone and saying, okay, they're going to have these particular needs. What do I need to do to meet them? Mm-hmm. Is such a relief. It makes life much easier.
And just sort of as a rewinded back step from that, I mean, folks who have issues like yours or other things that might affect them, do you feel communication with producer before anything happens needs to be better, or what do you think with regards to that? Is that an important thing?
I think I've generally had very good experiences with producers and with directors and such, but I think if you are a producer and you're looking to create something, that needs to be very high on your to-do list. I think one thing that I would encourage people to do before you post a casting call, before you reach out to friends asking if they want to do a project, work things like, what do I need to provide my actors? What do I need to provide my sound designer, whoever is involved? What do I need to do to make, within my the power that I have and the knowledge that I have, what do I need to do to create the easiest working environment I can? And how much time is it going to take me to get transcripts ready? How much time do I need to work in to make sure that I've got content warnings thoroughly done, had a sensitivity reader, all that jazz? Work it into your schedule before so that you don't get caught and don't have that flailing panic moment of, oh no, I didn't think about this. And of course, you can't necessarily prepare for everything. And you know, human beings forget stuff. I forget stuff all the time.
Yes. Constantly. Because probably like me, you're juggling about 100 things rather than just two.
Yeah.
I will. Yeah, well,
and it's It's 2020. All our brains are Swiss cheese at this point. We're all like, we're doing our best.
We are. We're getting on okay, right?
But keep saying it. And I think too. Yeah, absolutely. When I think too, as a producer, I think if you're sitting down and really planning as much as you possibly can, the other thing to do is once you've got your group assembled, whoever you're working with, ask the question again. Show them what you're planning on. Is this enough? Is this accurate? Is this correct? What do you need? Do I need to add anything to this list before we get started? Yeah. Being a planner is helpful.
Okay. So let's do that. So on that list, let's do a little verbal one, and we'll probably forget things because our brains, right? But yeah, so you're starting off, you know who your actors are, you're going to communicate with them what needs to be on that list.
Things like deadlines. And I think a really important thing to do, if you are someone who is on a strict schedule, and some shows aren't, but generally you do need lines by a certain point, whether or not you have a strict schedule. When it comes to deadlines, set them and then have a plan, add a buffer to your deadline. Let's say you need lines by the 25th, ask for them by the 20th. That way there's a grace period so people can get them in.
Soft and hard.
Be as flexible as you can be because things do happen. Yeah. Have a plan in place just in case a disaster happens and your lead actor can't get you lines for another 2 weeks. It happens. Have a backup plan as much as you possibly can, or at least if nothing else, have a plan for what you will say if you're delayed. That's greatly helpful because a lot of folks who have any kind of disability or, chronic illness or anything that might prevent them from getting lines in on time, mental health, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that there's a grace period and knowing that you are willing to work with them, that alone means the world.
Yeah. So communicate is key, being an open, please talk to me if there's an issue kind of producer. Yes.
Yeah. And having some kind of, depending on the size of the production and who you're working with, if you're working with people you don't know, it's a really good idea to have in place. If there's a problem, come talk to me. If the problem is with me, talk to this person.
Yeah.
That's a really important thing to have.
Yes, that's a great practice. And if that's possible, because a lot of folks do work solely, but yes, I think that's lovely.
Yeah, or with friends and you're we can talk to each other.
So good. So deadlines, safety and who to talk to if there's going to be something that needs to be resolved so you can move forward. And then it's, I guess, for sure, the anything you need aspect, which you've just covered. What can we do so that everyone can do best practice? Mm-hmm. What beyond that?
And now I'm thinking in terms of production, once the show is out. Build transcripts into your schedule, I beg, because especially if you are a chat podcast, chatty shows are harder to transcribe. I get that. Actual plays too. Yes. It's a lot. It's a lot of work. I've been doing transcripts for the interviews I've been doing for Seen and Not Heard, and it is a slog. It's a lot of work, but build it into your schedule from the outset.
Yeah.
And plan on having them right away because a lot of shows now are just realizing, ooh, I should have those. And now they're having to go back, seasons upon seasons and do their transcripts.
This is me. This is me right now. And honestly, I've tried so many different programs and because I speak nonsense, it comes out even worse. So, it says nut owl trench bottom fee. And I was like, hello, welcome to Medivha. Yeah. And it's like, oh. And so I is on my long list of wonderful things to do.
Yeah.
And so I feel
it's a lot
bad that I haven't, but it's because, an hour of talking, which most of these episodes are between 40 minutes and an hour. And when pretty much every other word is wrong, you might as well just type it out yourself.
Yeah. Well, and actually that was what I was initially doing. And a friend shared their Otter account with me, which has been very helpful.
Mm.
I still have to go back and fix quite a lot of it, but the bulk is transcribed, which is good, but it's still a lot of work, and there's only so much actual listening I am physically able to do before my ears will just sort of say, okay, no more comprehension for a few hours. Yeah, and I'm like, well.
Yeah. But no, you're right. It is a hugely important thing to be, so that folks who, you know, aren't able to listen effectively or use that to their enhance their understanding can have another way in.
Yeah. And you know, if you have a fiction podcast, if nothing else, just throw the recording script up. Mm. Even if it's not perfect, you can make it perfect later, but have it available when you release your episodes is the biggest thing. If you're able to have your transcripts available at the same time as the episodes are released, because otherwise it kind of sends a message that, you can wait.
Okay.
Oh, you can't hear? You can wait. And it kind of implies assigning less value to people who might need that access. Right. It doesn't necessarily mean that's where your heart is, but that's kind of, it kind of feels that way sometimes. And I, oh my gosh, it's like when I find somewhere that had, there was some show, I don't remember what it is. And even if I did, I don't want to put them on blast, but there was something I wanted to listen to. I couldn't find the transcripts anywhere. And I went hunting for them and they're like, oh, if you're a patron, you can have them.
Okay.
It's like, what? I have to pay? And everyone else can just get your content for free, but I have to pay.
Okay. Mm.
Yeah. So have them available and have them available for free.
Yeah. Yep. And once, you know, that's instilled in the culture of doing, then, you know, it becomes second nature. I mean, regards to prices and things like that concern, what's kind of average ballpark, would you say, for folks who aren't doing this but want to? Could you give some examples, perhaps, of experience you've heard?
Oh, dear. Cost-wise, I honestly don't know a lot because I have the luxury, again, of I'm sharing an account. My friend just gave me access to their Otter account. So I'm not sure how much it costs to use that service. I would have to go look it up. But off the top of my head, I'm not sure. But I know it can be. Well, and some people will hire someone to do transcription, which is a totally, and different transcriptionists are going to have different rates. But, you know, depending on what you want to do, that might be the best way to go about it, but it's that's going to cost money too.
Yeah, ping out a request. Can someone help me with my transcripts, please?
I do that a lot. I'm like, can someone just do this next section? I can't hear anything.
Yes, I know the lovely Cheyenne Bramwell does that too. So hunt Cheyenne down and give him work. So with regards to beyond transcript, I think the other thing that's come up as a more recent thing, to be honest, in my realms is things like information on Twitter pictures and things to make them more accessible. What do folks need to do for best practice there, do you think?
Oh my gosh. This is where I am failing at it, actually, because I didn't know that was a feature for the longest time, for one thing.
It's new to me as well.
It was brought to my attention. I was like, I don't even remember that. I don't remember seeing it. And I think I posted something today, a picture without text. I always forget to do it. And I wish Twitter would prompt you the way that now they do a prompt if you go to retweet an article that's like, do you want to read this first instead of just looking at the headline, which is great. But I wish they would also do that if you're posting a photo or be like, would you like to add alt text to this? Because then I would remember to do it. And I'm trying so hard to remind myself. Yes. But this is something that I think we need to remember. Disabled folks out there, we're not immune to messing up. Just because we're disabled, it doesn't mean that we are incapable of excluding or even harming people who are disabled differently from us.
Right.
And that, you know, it's really important to try and remember those who have other experiences than we do. And as to the best of our ability, to be inclusive and accessible whenever we can be.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of learned behaviors are just through ignorance of not knowing other things that can be done, really, isn't it? So things like this, I think, is a useful heads up to folks who perhaps weren't aware that why is it useful to have the alt text, the information on a picture?
Yeah, it will allow people who use screen readers, the ones that read the words out loud to them, folks with any kind of visual disability at all, it'll read the description of the image out loud to them. So you can put whatever description, like if you put, I don't know, a picture of yourself up, I could be like, oh, this is a picture of Caroline wearing a red shirt, looking to the left of the camera and smiling or something like that. And they will get an idea of what the photo is, even if they can't see it or can't see it clearly. And it just, and that happens a lot. You see with these really useful infographics that go around, a lot of the time they don't have the alt text. So like it's great information, but then people can't can't access it if they can't see the picture.
Okay. So there you go, folks. If you're using that kind of thing, make sure that you think about that other avenue, which is important to include our friends who potentially perhaps can't see as well as you. And I think also, I mean, there are quite a few other things, aren't there, as well, that people can do. What other things do you feel are most important to get inclusivity in the audio fiction publication?
Yeah. Oh, one thing that has been really, really interesting. I've been working on Temujin, which if you've not listened to that, oh my goodness, you must. It's so good. I've been helping them out with the transcripts. And so I've been going through what my job has been, listening to the episode and reading the transcript alongside it. And I've been making comments here and there where like, oh, this needs to be changed to be word perfect. Oh, add a description of the music here so that people who can't hear the music can have an idea of what it sounds like, what the tone is, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Those things are very, very helpful in transcripts, by the way. My rule of thumb, by the way, with transcripts is I should be able to read the script and know what the mood is, what the emotions are, what the beats of the story are without listening to it.
Right.
So if your script is effectively done, and if the descriptions are correct in it and done at the right times, then yeah, you can read the script and truly understand the story and get all the emotions and the story without having to listen.
Mm.
And so that's what I've been doing with Temujin. And they are doing something very cool where they have videos on YouTube with the audio from the podcast and the captions coming up in real time.
I've seen this happen a lot more. Yes.
Yeah. It's really cool. And I know that takes a whole different skill. Like, I don't know how to do that. It would take a different skill set than I have at the moment. But it is something I definitely want to do specifically with Seen and Not Heard.
I mean, you've got 2 minutes spare. Surely, Caroline.
Surely.
You know, you just slot it in between. Isn't there an extra minute every 4 years or something?
Do you want to know something that's true? And this is absolutely true. The other day I was making dinner and editing a podcast at the same time. I have absolutely no... what is wrong with me? like, I was frying things. I was making latkes and I was editing...
Brilliant.
I was editing something.
I've done similar jumping on my mini trampoline and listening to an episode and then stopping for a bit and sort of bouncing on one leg whilst I just take that bit out, then jumping back on.
Yeah.
That's multitasking.
I can't do one thing at a time. I am incapable of it. But yeah, I love this video thing and I want more people to do it. It's also a really great opportunity to show off your show art because it's you're looking at. That's what Rashan did, this beautiful thing, Rashan who makes Temujin, where there's this gentle animation of the fire in the show.
Always nice.
It's beautiful. The minute I saw it, I was like, So yeah, there are really cool things that you can do.
Yes.
And I definitely want to specifically do it with Seen and Not Heard for obvious reasons.
Yes, do.
So I'm going to try and teach myself how.
I mean, I think also, you know, think about it's a wider audience too, isn't it? It's not just your audio fiction audience. And I think we are still in trouble in as much as there's a lot of navel gazing. We sell things, if you like. We up our shows ante to other folks making shows. And it's about trying to get that wider audience. So things like that
would
potentially help with that too.
and the thing that's nice too about having it on a screen is like if you're able to, I could throw up an episode of it onto my TV and it's a different kind of speaker. And there are times when that audio is better for me than putting on my headphones. So I can still listen to it and hear it and understand it. And if I'm able to see the captions at the same time, all the better.
Yeah.
And I know people will be like, well, then it's not technically a podcast. And you know what? Yes, it is. Stop that. Yeah. Stop being a snob.
There is a bit of that, isn't there? But no, I think if it works...
I'm guilty of it myself. But
if it works and it gets you more listens, then it's won, right?
And as
being as inclusive as possible. Superb. I mean, if there's someone listening right now who perhaps has similar issues to your good self or other elements of life, as you talked of chronic illness and so on, that just make it that bit more difficult to get into this kind of creative medium, what advice would you give to them to just jump in and do it, reach out?
Honestly, that is the biggest thing, because that really is how I started. I decided one day, I said, I'm going to make a podcast. And then 3 weeks later, I had one.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my Scary Stories kind of anthology thing that I've done.
Yes.
And I didn't know what I was doing. I'd never used Audacity before. And I just said, okay, I said I'm doing it. And I said it out loud on Twitter. And so it has to happen now. Mm-hmm. And then it did. And so it's absolutely possible, first of all, to do it if you want to do it. I would say if you're looking to get into it and you don't know where to start, there are some really good people to follow. I would say you are definitely one of those people.
Oh, thanks.
I'd recommend following you. I would say Jordan Cobb, Sarah Ray Werner,
yes.
Ayer Olivieri, Cassie Josephs, mm-hmm. Cole Burkhart, mm-hmm. Danny Ellett. There's a lot of really great people who are kind of constantly giving all this information about it.
Yeah.
The Radio Drama Revival folks, they're fantastic.
Yes.
Will Williams. All of these people, I could sit here and just list people and we'd be here forever because there are so many good people in podcasting. But these are all folks who really put a lot of information out there. It's just available. You don't have to really go looking for it. So if you're following these people and many, many others, you'll probably find just by virtue of following them.
Yeah.
You'll get a ton of information. Like I was thinking about Cassie specifically. Cassie does a lot of free information about accessibility and podcasting. Like is just a fantastic resource and has provided so much information in threads and in presentations.
Yes.
And you know, when you're finding those folks, you will also find resources for what can help you specifically.
Mm-hmm.
I reached out to Cassie and Cole Burkhart
very
early on, and both of them, because I was like, how in the blue blazes do I podcast while deaf? Like, is that even a thing? And then a few people were like, oh yeah, here's who to talk to. And I remember reaching out to them, and they both gave me so much amazing information, and they were so helpful.
Super.
And so sweet.
Mm.
Yeah. And a lot of, I have found across the board, it's a welcoming community in the sense that we're excited to have people and we're pretty friendly in general, but also because we want to listen to your show.
Yes.
Like we want the show.
Mm.
It's interesting in contrast to theater, not in contrast necessarily, but in theater, local theater, you're competing for the audience. You really are trying to get people to come see your show that's happening at this time and not the one across town that's happening at the same time. You want that audience member with you. And that's not necessarily the case with podcasting. We're not trying to, we don't have to worry necessarily about that for the
there
most
part.
There is room.
There's
a lot of room.
Wide, burgeoning space to be filled.
And we crave
yes,
content.
We
Give
do.
Us the shows. We're like, oh my gosh, look at any Audio Drama Sunday thread that someone does. Like I was thinking about Bob Raimondo does these great ones. And you will see us just geeking
yes.
about each other's work. And so like, if you are like, oh, I don't think anyone's going to want to listen to it, I promise someone will. We will be
yes,
in here, come play.
And folks like the Cambridge Geek celebrate the releases every month.
Yeah.
And also on their fiction podcast News Weekly, we try and share people's milestones of their debuts and their like finales to seasons. And
yeah.
So there's so many brilliant, wonderful things happening.
Yeah, yeah. Please come play.
Jump in. Yeah. With regards to communities, is there anywhere specific you've been on any of the social media platforms that perhaps are collated spaces?
Twitter is a really great place to find people. And then Discord also has, I'm in too many servers, but it's good.
Yes.
It's great though, because I have, I'm in one that's specifically for sound designers. And if I hop in there and I'm like, hey, does anyone have a sound effect of a door? Because none of these doors sound like doors. Someone will have something. Or if I'm like, hi, I don't know what the heck I just did in Audacity, but it's doing this. Someone help me. And someone will help me solve the problem.
Yeah.
And there are a bunch of communities on Discord, a bunch of servers that are just open and available that you can join. And they're really wonderful. They're good places to be. And Discord also, I like it because it's fairly intuitive for me to use, because you can divide everything into channels. And I happen to have OCD, I actually have it.
Right.
So channels and organization are so good.
Mm.
I love these things.
They're all lined up beautifully with their lovely logos and yes, all the channels.
Yes, it's so satisfying. I have organized and reorganized the order in which my Discord servers go in the folders so many times, and they're in color order right now because that's just who I am as a person.
As a voice actor as well, just sort of thinking with that headset on, what top tips would you give voice actors specifically with regards to approaching auditions and just fight the fear and just jumping in?
Yeah.
What would you suggest?
Auditioning is always a nerve-wracking experience. I've been acting, I'll be 33 this month. I've been acting since I was 5.
Happy birthday this month.
Thank you. But that's like, I've been doing this for a long time. And I still get so freaking nervous every time I have to open my mouth. I get so nervous. But the thing that I have found helps is having worn the director hat as many times as I have and having been a creator, producer, whatever, knowing that I want to hear you. Like, I want you to audition. I want you to perform. I'm excited to hear it. And I don't know a single director who's not like, I can't wait to get these casting in. Oh my God. Like, we get so excited. So every time we get an email that's like, such and so has auditioned, it's like, yes, we run over to them. Every single time I saw that someone had auditioned for Seen and Not Heard, I was like, oh, yay. I was so jazzed. So know that we are very supportive on that end. Like, advice that I can give, though, for just kind of the technical stuff of auditioning, room is going to matter more than your equipment for the most part. You need a semi-decent mic. You need like one that isn't your phone, you know, but you can get them for not that expensive. But what really matters is your environment. You got to soundproof that environment. You got to make sure you don't have tons of neighbor noise if you can avoid it.
Ask them to stop the planes at Heathrow would be really useful.
Oh, God. I live next to the highway, and I live in an apartment, so it is chaos. But blanket forts are your friend.
Yeah. Yes.
And I literally do everything on a free recording program, sitting on my son's bedroom floor in a blanket fort with a $90 microphone that I splurged on.
Super.
So you can do it without very much, but you got to make sure you do have a good recording atmosphere. And follow the directions on the casting call. And ask questions if you aren't sure, because I promise we will answer them. We're not, for the most part, people aren't going to be jerks about it. If you ask a question like, what does AABBCC mean? You know, we'll help you out. We want you to succeed. I know for me personally, I got a few auditions for Seen and Not Heard where the audio was really bad or there was background noise. And I emailed them and I said, can you try it again and fix the environment so I can see if that's something I can work with?
Good. That's good.
And, or like if someone misunderstood the instructions, I was like, okay, I think it was just a misunderstanding. Let me see if I can help. Because we want you to succeed.
Yes.
I have never once met someone who was like, gosh, I hope I get these terrible auditions so I can laugh at them. Like, no, we want you to do well. We want to help.
I mean, just as a point on that as well, the process of, this is probably a very naive question from somebody who's not in the disabled community, but at what point is it important or should you disclose any specific needs you might have? At what point would you do that?
It's different for everyone. I think it depends a lot on your personal comfort level. I'm very comfortable and very open with talking about the fact that I'm deaf. I have no problem bringing that up. But some people, depending on what they're dealing with, might not want to disclose it right away. For me, though, when I audition for something, because a lot of times the casting call will be like, tell us something about you or any relevant information.
Yeah.
I always bring it up. And I say, like, I'm hard of hearing. And if we do table reads, I need a visual. I just kind of mention briefly what kind of accommodations I generally need.
Yep.
Just so that they have a heads up. So they can make plans if they want to cast me.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it depends so much on your personal comfort level. I do think it would be useful in casting calls to be like, if cast, what accommodations would you need? Or some kind of similar question. That's something that I plan to do going forward.
Yes, I love that.
It's a useful thing, and it kind of takes the pressure off of someone having to bring it up out of the blue, which I think is where a lot of people struggle. Because they're like, oh, they didn't ask, but should I tell them?
Yeah.
And it's the same.
Yeah, I mean, how relevant is it? This is the thing. It's like, yes, is it important? Will it make it?
Yeah, it's like, is this appropriate to bring up? Because that's sometimes the struggle, too. I think anyone who's ever been on a job interview knows. It's like, do I mention this, and this? But I think if you're the producer, opening the door so that the person who's auditioning for you doesn't have to open it themselves. It's very helpful. Mm. And it kind of...
Yeah,
it relieves a lot of that anxiety, I think. At least for me, it does.
I think that's, yeah, a wondrous thing. We should all be doing that for sure. I think maybe this is the snippet we should ping out into the world first. But yeah, I mean, just with regards to your process as a voice actor as well, kind of what preparation do you have before either audition or actual recording for the role?
One thing that I do pretty much always, I will record just a cold read of whatever I'm auditioning for, which means I will open up the side, I'll find whatever character it is I'm auditioning for, and I'll do a recording of myself reading it without looking it over or anything, just sight unseen. And that helps me kind of get a sense of where I might have trouble words, because I also have a stutter. Why am I a voice actor? I'm deaf and I have a stutter. But
goodness, it hasn't shown its head, amazing.
It gets written into things sometimes. Sometimes if I stammer, that's me trying to find a different word to use because I can feel it coming. We have written into a couple of podcasts. Evan likes to use it. But yeah, if it helps me to know, like, okay, this line is going to give me trouble. I need to work on this a few times and read it over a couple times before I record.
Yeah.
And that's actually what I did. Actually, the monologue I sent you was my cold read.
See, this is, I have to tell you, I'm very excited to have Caroline on this season of Quarrelogues.
And I sent
it to you yesterday, and it's pretty much been done, and it's beautiful. It's like, wow, how's that for a turnaround?
I actually did a couple other takes of it, and I was like, I think the cold read is best. So I sent it in. But that's why it's also nice to have the cold read, because sometimes that's going to be your best take. I have found it's never a waste of time to rehearse it. You know, I always find value in that.
I agree. Yeah. I think some voice actors, I feel, and I'm not going to name anyone, but I just feel I've got lazy, and they do very much just jump in, and the script is the script as is then. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like any acting role, you know, theatre, film, whatever, you spend time and you learn those ins and outs. And
it can be really helpful.
And motivations and I can't understand why folks don't.
Yeah, and sometimes you'll discover something if you go through and rehearse it a couple times. You're like, oh, wait, I should say it like this, or oh, I should try this voice. So I think it's useful to play. And when I'm auditioning, one thing that I'll do too is when I'm reading the casting call, I will physically write down onto a piece of paper like what they need from me and like how they want it done, because that helps me to remember. Because it's so easy to be like, you know, auditioning for a whole bunch of stuff and everyone has a slightly different format that they want. Like, oh, this audition wants you to read the whole thing all the way through and then do the whole thing all the way through again. Or this one wants you to go line by line three times or whatever it is. Yep. Taking notes helps me a lot.
Yeah.
It helps me keep track of everything. And then also, if I'm not looking at the casting call while I'm writing the email, you know, that's the big thing. But yeah, I think just being as prepared as you can be, look over the casting call a few times, read it out a few times, do a cold read, very helpful. And don't be afraid to ask if you're unclear on something. I think that's something a lot of people, I see it with my friends a lot, and I kind of do the same thing sometimes, depending on who it is I'm auditioning for. But you see something and you're like, I don't know what this means. And you go ask your friend, like, hey, what do you think this means? It's like, no, ask the person who wrote it. Ask the person who wrote it. They will know what they meant. Yes. And like I say, again, for the most part, we're all pretty nice. You're not going to get yelled at.
Yeah, I agree.
Promise.
Don't be shy.
We want good things for you.
I think, communication is key. And the people that I am involved with, I had a lovely table read on Friday for something called Cyclone by Graz Richards. And the cast assembled there was just glorious. And I just uplifted my mood, which was, you know, it's been a tough week, I must say. So it was really so super.
Oh, there's nothing like a good table read. It puts your heart right. I had a really good one the other day for Ghost Detectives, and I'm very excited for this cast. I cannot wait to tell everyone who's going to be in that episode. But it was just, oh my god, like, y'all aren't ready. But I got off of it and I immediately got a text from one of the actors. I was like, that was so much fun. And I was like, I know, and it just felt so good. You get that creative rush and it just feels really good.
I have a deep respect for my fellow audio fiction folks, and when you hear something, it was something between specifically Angelique Lazarus and Erica mm-hmm. Sanderson, and my goodness, they're on fire. I'm very excited, so yeah, I can't wait to see whenever that comes out. But yeah, so what else are you involved in? What are your future plans for taking over the podcast world?
Yes, I'm it's the same thing we do every night, Pinky. I have a couple of shows that aren't out yet. So the things that are coming up are going to be Surreal Love. There's going to be another season of Shifts. And ooh, that one is definitely shifting. There's a lot happening and a lot has changed. Mm-hmm. I'm doing another show called Crossing Stars that I just announced. And that is me and Alexander Dottie, who I work with I work with him on This Planet Needs a Name. He plays James and he is just a lovely, wonderful person.
Done a scene opposite him.
He's the best.
Well, I didn't actually sadly get to do it with him, but I was told
he's great.
Yeah, the excitement he's ahead.
So great.
Sounds awesome.
I was just like, as I was writing it, I was like, I think Alex needs to play this part. And I just reached out and I was like, hey, you want to, he was like, yeah. And he's also going to be on the Queer Pride and Prejudice adaptation that I'm working on. I just announced so I get to say. We're still announcing cast members as we go. But
exciting.
Yeah, we're going to do, it's going to be very faithful to the text, except that there's going to be some fiddling about of gender and sexuality.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a very faithful adaptation. It's just very, very queer.
You know, the world could do a bit more queer. Everyone needs to just relax and
just
enjoy
put it everywhere.
Everybody.
Yes, that's my intention. If I ever make anything that seems cishet, it's by accident. I was joking. I was like, I think Seen and Not Heard is the straightest thing I make. And no, it's not.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. I'm excited. I do have a few other things kind of up my sleeve that I haven't announced yet, so I can't really say.
Oh, my goodness,
but,
Caroline.
I'm so excited. I have so many projects.
Adventures ahead sound very exciting. And how about other people? What are you listening to that you can recommend that folks must jump onto right now, or any specific creatives to follow other than the ones you've mentioned?
Everyone I work with, please follow them. They're wonderful. shows that I'm really taken with right now. I was just listening to Donna Is Her Name today, which is a phenomenal microfiction. It like my jaw drops every single episode at least once. It's just incredibly well done and so interesting. Mm-hmm. I also love Dos After You.
Yes.
It's so good. That is a poem. Mm. It's beautiful. David does such a beautiful job on that. And David is such a sweetheart. Yes, and Desperado, I am mildly obsessed with. And I'm on it now.
Hooray.
I have been the biggest Desperado fan since I was told to listen to it. And then I get to be on it now and I'm kind of losing my mind. I'm so excited.
That's the thing. When you get to be on something you've been a fan of, people don't understand how very amazingly exciting.
Oh my God. That's what happened with Great and Terrible too, because I love Great and Terrible. I'm always telling Anthony, I'm like, I'm your biggest fan. They're just like, okay.
Yeah, let's go all Annie Wilkes, is it? Number one.
Maybe. Yeah, no. A little nicer than that. Yeah, yes, they asked if I wanted to be on Great and Terrible. I was like, are you kidding me? Yes.
Amazing.
So I get to do that, and it's just, that one's wonderful. It's such a good show. And Leslie Gideon is just incredible in that. And of course, she plays my sister in Seen and Not Heard. And getting to work with her was so great.
Yeah, no, superb. I think there's a few people who have the Midas touch, I do feel. Everything they're in is fantastic.
Oh, for sure. Oh my gosh, there's so much good stuff out there. Oh yeah, there's so much. Like, there's something out there for everyone, I feel.
There truly is, and if it isn't, make it yourself.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and you can.
And you can.
You totally can. I will help you.
Well, this is it. I wholeheartedly offer up my services to be of any use to you, and Caroline just has as well. So, people, there's no excuse, right? I hope you feel suitably inspired. If Caroline can do 500,000 podcasts at once, and cook, and look after crazy, active pussycats, then you can too. So
maybe don't necessarily follow my amount of work. I don't necessarily recommend it.
Well, I want to say, please do take care, because you're very precious, and I don't want you to burn yourself out. It's very, very important. So do take some headspace time, some jumping on mini trampoline time.
Yes. I need to get one of those. It sounds fun.
Do you know, you should. Oh, but oh my God, it
really
hurts.
My son would love it.
Well, on that note, it has been wonderful to have you on Medieval Podcast. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing all of your expertise and fun. And as I say, you are hugely inspiring. So long may you work on all of the things you wish to, and people should employ you forthwith as a voice actor too. So yeah, I really hope your next year is the best yet. So
thank you, and same to you. This was so much fun.
Well, thank you so much. Have a wonderful everything.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.